This is Lecture 26. So, last time we were together, we talked about path integral of the following kind. I'll write it in our relatively informal style, which has the advantage of at least you get a better chance to see what's going on. dp squared plus dq squared divided by dt squared by dt squared times dt with a coefficient n, script n sub nu, and we take a limit as nu went to infinity. We want to talk now about coordinate transformations. And in particular, I want to use the fact that I can go from the variables p and q to new variables p bar and q bar according to the standard one form of connection. For example, I could write that as d g bar, capital G bar of p bar and q bar. So this g bar would serve as the generator written in a form in which the independent variables are taken as p bar and q bar. Under such a transformation, the symbol h transforms as a scalar. That means there's the new function of the new variables, but it equals the old function of the old variables numerically. We will have a transformed version of the metric, for which we are thankful, because that will encode actually the form of the new coordinates. So that will be some version of the metric that looks like that, which I won't detail in particular. That depends on the coordinate choice you make. But it could look like something like this. That is to say, A times dp bar squared, 2b times dp bar dq bar, plus c of p bar and q bar dq bar squared. Still describes a flat space, but now expressed generally in curvilinear canonical coordinates. In any case, what do we have? If I put these changes into our formula, we have p bar q bar dot minus, or rather plus, g bar dot p bar and q bar minus h bar of p bar q bar dt. And then we have the new version of the Brownian motion, e to the minus 1 over 2 nu. I'll just write it as d sigma squared of p bar q bar divided by dt squared times dt. And in a canonical transformation, we know in this version of the path integral, there are an equal number of p's and q's. And so the invariance of the Liouville measure is available for us. So under those coordinate transformations, we have curly d of p bar times curly d q bar, script n sub nu in front again, and limit as nu goes to infinity. G bar is the total derivative, and I can take that out front. So that would look like e to the I g bar at the upper limit, which is p bar double prime, q bar double prime, minus g bar at the lower limit, which is p bar prime, q bar prime, where the primes indicate the pinned values of the Brownian motion. And then we have left our a to nu, our integral I by h bar, p bar, q bar dot, minus h bar, p bar, q bar, dt. And we have just what we had before, e to the minus 2 nu d sigma squared p bar q bar dt squared dt d curly d of p bar curly d q bar. And again, we have our limit as nu goes to infinity. This equaled before what we call p double prime, q double prime. That's the Bra coherent state, e to the minus I, capital H, capital T, divided by H bar, and the Ket coherent state, p prime, q prime. Let me now bring these phase factors from the right-hand side. Well, of course, it's hard to tell what the right and left-hand side of the equation is writing it this way, but I meant this version to be the left-hand side of the equation, of course. That stands here. So I'm going to bring those to the other side of the equation. So that becomes p double, q double, e to the minus I, ht by h bar, prime, q prime, times e, by the way, there's an h bar under the g, times e to the I by h bar g bar p bar prime, q bar prime, minus g bar of p bar double prime, q bar double prime, like that. That equals limit nu to infinity curly dn e to the I by h bar p bar q bar dot minus h bar p bar q bar dt. And then let me just write a little bracket here. Well, okay, we'll do it. D sigma squared dt squared dt curly d p bar curly d q bar. This form of the equation looks very much like what we started with, perhaps still on the board there over at the left. This part is structurally the same. That is the characteristic feature of classical mechanics in canonical coordinates. What is, of course, different is the metric has dramatically changed. Here it is strict Cartesian coordinates, implying, incidentally, that we must have a flat phase space even to admit those Cartesian coordinates. Over here, we generally have curvilinear coordinates, and the p-bar and the q-bar might not even be independent anymore as the p and the q were. But I am using the Stratonovich prescription all the way along. So this formula, which is valid classically, I'm allowed to use, even though the variables are themselves Brownian motion paths.
Question. What did independent mean? P bar and Q bar might not even be independent coordinates.
P bar and Q bar might not be independent coordinates. So the form of the metric may have a cross term, such as here with a B inside of it. And if there's a B inside, then it would not factor into two separate Brownian motions. If that were the case, then in this particular situation, this stochastic integral would be different for Ito and Stratonovich, and to preserve our desire to maintain the ordinary rules of calculus, we will maintain Stratonovich throughout. All right. Now, the last time we were together, we talked about how we would define coherent states under a coordinate transformation. I gave you an initial prescription, was that they were identical with each other. Just new name for same state, old name for the same state. But we also talked about allowing ourselves a phase factor, and I indicated how that phase factor might arise. That phase factor would arise by saying that P bar dQ bar was associated with PdQ, standard formula very much over there, with a connection that was capital G, DG, P, and Q. That formula looks rather like the one I have on the board, except it's kind of inverted. If I bring this DG bar from the right-hand side over to the left-hand side, then I have exposed the P bar dQ bar, which is exactly what I have here. And so that indicates that what I call G bar over there, P bar of Q bar, is actually equal to minus capital G of P and Q. If I make that assertion, then that formula over there is totally consistent with this formula over here. That equation is not demanded by those two equations because I could put 17 or some other constant in this connection because that would disappear with the D, but that would be rather unnatural to do that. So, I have a G bar standing here, and if I use the formula that G bar of its arguments is the same as the negative of G of its natural arguments here, I can replace my Bra-Ket inner product in the following way. I'll put them together with each other for a moment. So this part would have an E to the minus there, so it would be plus that would be association of that bra with that phase factor e to my size capital HT divided by H bar, and then I have the other phase factor e to minus I over H bar capital G of P prime Q prime against the ket P prime Q prime. Here. Notice the signs had changed. This term here came with a plus, but under this transformation it gathers a minus, which is then very much connected with this situation, and therefore I can identify those as P bar double prime, Q bar double prime, labeled coherent states, E to minus I HT by H bar, same on the cats as well, P bar prime, Q bar prime. So we have this expression equal to this expression. And so there is a beautiful coordinate covariance of this formula, and the physics is maintained. Physics is maintained for the very simple reason that I am dealing with well-defined integrals. Now, they don't look like they're well-defined because I have written them in our traditional Cavalier formal fashion. But we know that this can be put together with a bona fide Brownian motion. Left over is the 2 pi e to the nu capital T divided by 2. And as such, bona fide integral, you can change the coordinates and still have the numerical value of it. The value of the integral unchanged. Okay, so we have this covariance of our expression. Absolutely fundamental fact to address. And that allows us to introduce a genuinely coordinate-free coherent
coherent state path integral procedure of quantization. You remember our discussion about classical mechanics in which we introduced the notion of a symplectic potential. A symplectic potential which is a one form. In coordinate version, that would take, for example, the form PDQ. Equivalently, it would, in different coordinates, would be PDQ bar plus D of G bar, P bar, Q bar. That's two examples of different coordinates. The symplectic potential, however, under exterior derivative, gives rise to the symplectic form. Omega. And when I take the exterior derivative of PDQ, I get DP wedge DQ. When I take the exterior derivative of the second version, I get DP bar wedge DQ bar, because two exterior derivatives, D squared on anything is zero. That's like curl of the gradient. So here is your invariance in functional form, the Darboux coordinates, of the symplectic form in canonical coordinates. We said we were also going to identify a function H, which is the Hamiltonian. I don't want to identify that by P and Q. That's giving it coordinate values. What I do is I take my phase space manifold and put my functional form above it, like some Persian rug. And above a particular point in the phase space manifold, there's a certain height, and that is the H associated with that particular point in the phase space manifold. I want to talk about a path in this manifold going from point one to point two. I want to parameterize that path by t, time. Therefore, the value of h will change and depend on time, h of t. Likewise, the symplectic form, symplectic potential, will depend on t. And I need a dt here, sorry. That makes both of them one forms. And I integrate that from point one to point two, and that becomes my classical action in coordinate-free language. Standard way, if I introduce coordinates, for example, that would be pdq in this set of coordinates minus h, p, and q. Now the p's and the q's both depend on time. I'm not explicitly showing that. That would be one form of coordinates. The second choice, p bar dq bar plus dg bar of p bar q bar minus Hamiltonian bar, the new function evaluated at the new coordinates, dg. That would be a second version of the same thing in this set of coordinates. But all of that is contained in this single coordinate-free formula. It's no different than taking a vector in three dimensions. Question.
Is the square closing bracket too soon? It's PDQ minus
this one H. Is too soon. Both of them are too soon. Thank you so much. The square is outside, so that the DT is in. Bless you. It's no different than we talk about a vector. A vector is a direction and a magnitude. There it is. That's my hand pointing up in the sky. You all agree I'm pointing at approximately that part of the ceiling. However, I can represent that in coordinate form by introduce axes and coordinates along those axes. But there's nothing sacred about that particular frame. I could choose a different reference frame. One could be the Cartesian coordinates associated with the corners of this room, and the other could be the Cartesian coordinates associated with a room in London. And London, being partway around the Earth, will have its room slightly tilted relative to ours, and that would have coordinate values x prime, y prime, and z prime. This is the same vector in one set of coordinates or in a different set of coordinates, but the vector is the vector is the vector. Okay. Now, that takes care of classical mechanics. How do we promote that into a coordinate-free version of quantization? What I need is to introduce an intrinsic version of Brownian motion. You remember the diffusion equation. D rho by dt is 1 half times nu. Nu is the diffusion constant, to be honest, times the Laplacian operator acting on rho. In curvilinear coordinates, I might wish to make that the Laplace-Beltrami operator, a standard version of the Laplacian on a coordinate-free characterization of the Laplacian in a general situation. I want to take the solution of this equation, which associates two different points in the phase-space manifold. Maybe I call that straight M. And says that the rho I'm interested in is given by x and t, y and 0. That is the solution which we would characteristically think of has the paths to start at point y at 0. I guess I've got them going this way. And end at point x at time t. And that is given by 1 over, in two dimensions, 1 over 2 pi nu times t, e to the minus distance between x and y squared divided by 2 nu t. That's an intrinsic characterization of this quantity. It has the property that as t goes to 0, this goes to a Dirac delta function. And that is the, if you like, the normalization of the particular solution, its initial condition that solves this equation.
Is that a square root?
Question?
Square root?
Not in two dimensions. I want to associate that rho to a Brownian motion measure. And so I will say that this quantity here, this numerical value, is given by the integral of a measure pinned to start at these points and end at these points on the phase space, on the manifold. I can use this and fold it over and over again to generate the entire Brownian motion pinned quantity in an intrinsic way, mu, which takes us from the initial time 0 to the final time capital T. I put in now my classical action formula, theta minus, I've used capital H. Okay, I'd now like to switch to little h because it is that symbol and that symbol alone which is appropriate for this game we're playing today. I put in my 2 pi and my e to the nu capital T over 2 h bar. I take the limit as nu goes to infinity. That becomes a function from the starting point in my phase space at time 0 to the ending point, x double prime, after a time capital T. And we can use the Gelfand-Neimar-Siegel construction
to associate that with, I'm going to use the mathematical notation here, coherent states at phase space points. Given that way.
Okay. The whole point of that exercise is to show you it can be done. It's not a practical way to calculate. It's not a practical way to calculate classical dynamics using this formula, coordinate free. But it is nice to know that there is a geometrical setting, symplectic geometry here, underneath the structure, and that by adding a metrical structure here, there's always a metric associated with a Laplace-Beltrami operator, by adding a metrical structure, I have given you a coordinate-free formulation of quantum mechanics. That was stressed in 1988 by myself. Now, this kind of language may be a little bit foreign to you. I'm not surprised by that. So let me give you yet another interesting language offered by Mariner, 1992, using tensor notation. We're all familiar with the ideas of tensor calculus, and those of us who've had some general relativity even appreciate the beauty of writing things with upper and lower indices and how things transform. So Mariner showed, 1992, that you can use general coordinates. You don't have to stick to canonical coordinates. So let's talk about our two-dimensional phase space. And we'll talk about a point now labeled by the Greek letter xi associated with the point x over there. And when we want to talk about coordinates, as we do in tensor analysis, we'll have xi1 and xi2, the two coordinates for our two-dimensional manifold. Here is Mariner's expression. E to the I by H bar integral A sub A will be an index which is 1 and 2, depending on xi, d xi super A. So this is a vector in two dimensions, transforms like a vector. This is a, dxc is a vector, this is a covariant component, these are contravariant components, dxc. And that is a saturated index, one down, one up. And as you know from your calculus, from your general relativity, that's a coordinate invariant statement. I put on a function on that, that's our Hamiltonian, dt. I have a metric. Since I'm dealing with arbitrary coordinates here, I can't give it in such elegant Cartesian coordinates alone, so I give it in the general way as we do in relativity. So that's g sub ab, that's the metric, xi dot a, xi dot b, integral dt. And then I have an invariant measure, product over square root of g of xc times d xc1 d xc2, g being the determinant of this metric. You remember the invariant volume in relativity is always square root of g times the elementary differential of the coordinates. I've left a blank here. And that blank reflects a very interesting change from what we've had before in general coordinates. This little term here came outside as our representative of the ground state energy in the quantum Hall effect becomes coordinate dependent. Nu by 2 h bar integral square root FAB xc, F with two indices down, then FAB with two indices upstairs, xc, divide by 2, all in the square root, then a dt
Let me tell you what capital F is. A is like a vector potential. Vector potential can undergo a gauge transformation. So if I make a vector potential transformation AA of C, it would look like this. Let's call it plus lambda comma or d by d xa, xa rather, dx, that's all, right there. So when I put that term in here, that would become a total derivative. And that total derivative is exactly like we've been dealing with our g. That g then would come outside the integral. F, on the other hand, is the electromagnetic field associated with that vector potential. So that is d by d xc b times a of xc minus d by d xc a b of xc. Okay. Let us take our canonical examples.
John,
sir.
Before you go, this expression is meant to be the same object as the...
When I put in my factor nu sub nu and take a limit as nu goes to infinity, this will not be the same factor anymore. I'll put a bar on that because I've extracted that part out.
But this is another representation of the same correct state.
Absolutely right. And so the question is, this is the same, and the point is, this is in general coordinates which need not be canonical. Let me specialize, however, this formula to canonical version, and we will see its connection with what we've done before.
I have one more question about that formula. The capital pi, what is the meaning of the capital pi?
That's a product over every point xc, I beg your pardon, every point in the interval capital T to capital zero. It's a formal product of differentials at each point of time. It's not so different than what we, when I write curly dp, that is often written product over the time separate time points, dp individually integrated at those separate times. Okay. If I'm going to talk about an canonical family, then I am limiting myself to the choice that this vector potential can take. I would like to have P dQ here, something like that. So I will take A to have the following form. A2 xc to be xc super 1 and A1 xc to be 0. That means that expression becomes e to the I by h bar xc 1 dxc 2. It's like our P and our Q, PDQ. Minus Hamiltonian of those coordinates, c1, xc 2, if you like, dt. Now, what is our F value? So I take the derivative here. So I only have an A2, so I have a F2 derivative with respect to number 1. That's dA2 dxc1. Well, that's all it is. It's equal to xc1, so I get the number 1 everywhere coordinate independent. Therefore, F12, because of anti-symmetry, is minus 1. We can say, therefore, that FAB is equal to minus epsilon AB. That's the standard anti-symmetric symbol, plus or minus 1, depending on its permutation.
FAB upstairs, on the other hand, which is needed here.
Notice that this is a tensorial invariant. I have two indices downstairs, two indices upstairs.
To get those indices upstairs, I have to raise them from down below. So let's call that FCD G AC G B D. Right, so let's put those together. G A C G B D F C D F A B. That now is my F A B F upstairs A B, the contraction of those two together. But these are both epsilons. So that is epsilon A B, epsilon C D, GAC GBD. You know the definition of the determinant. Oh, where's my 2? Didn't I have a 2?
I have a 2.
Thank you. So this is twice the determinant, not of G downstairs, but of G upstairs. So that's twice the determinant of the inverse G. Okay, so my next quantity here, then, this will become the determinant G inverted. That's e to the new 2t h bar dt divided by the square root of determinant G. And then we have the same old form for the rest of it, the kinetic energy GAB, C dot A, C dot B, DT, then a product over every point of time, square root of the metric, DXC1, DXC2. Okay, now we have to choose a metric. I would like to have, like, or require, even better, to have the symplectic form equal the relevant volume element. In particular, the symplectic form will be the differential of xc1 dxc2, because this is our PDQ right here, and I want to take its differential. That will be equal to dxc1 wedge dxc2. On the other hand, our invariant volume element is this quantity here, square root of determinant g, dxc1, dxc2. In the tensor world, or in many worlds, we don't typically write the anti-symmetric wedge symbol here, but that's to be understood, because this is this transform of the Jacobian, which is not the same as saying these two guys simply multiply one another. In point of fact, I want this to be equal to square root of gxc times dxc1, dxc2. And to make the analogy even more perfect, I will put a little wedge symbol between those two. That means that the determinant of interest to me has a numerical value plus 1 in order to have this taken care of. Okay, so now we've simplified life down to the following expression. Let me erase this guy in the middle here. E to the I h bar xc1 dxc2 minus h of xc dt. Our middle guy is now e to the nu by 2 h bar integral dt, which will be capital T, our kinetic energy, 1 over T nu, G A B exceed C dot A exceed dot B dt. And finally, our measure is product D exceed 1, oh, upstairs, D exceed 2, or D exceed 1, D exceed 2, where the symbol curly D then includes this product. So these two things are the same. So I have now brought myself to a very general statement of things. I am in canonical coordinates as far as we are classically talking. I have the measure of integration given by the symplectic form, and I have only the fact that I may be in rather curvilinear coordinates of this kind of canonical coordinates. So that brings us to our rather general statement, which I believe we had over here. Since I declare that our space will be flat, I then know that I can always choose coordinates for the G such that this will be Cartesian, and then the final form would permit me to write C1, DX, C2 in the proper choice of those coordinates, e to the nu cap T over 2 H bar, that comes out front now, e to the minus 1 over 2 nu exceed dot 1 squared plus exceed dot 2 squared dt, product dxc 1 product with dxc 2. And so I have recovered from this very elegant formula here our subset of interesting cases dealing with not only the canonical coordinates, but even the Cartesian form of the canonical coordinates.
Okay. You've heard a great deal about coherent states for the last large number of lectures. I'm going to give you a break from that for a while. We're going to introduce a new section, perhaps. However, before I do that, let me just ask if there's any questions on what we've done so far today, for example. Okay. So that brings us to section 6.5, which is a little bit out of order of our original syllabus. I will now take as imposition of constraints. This will be the theory of how one quantizes systems involving constraints.
John, before you go on, I can't remember people's names, but this seems puzzling that you can write this down in general coordinates and not end up back at Gelfand and Planck and their error.
So the question arises, how can I write this in general coordinates and not end up like Gelfand and Jagloom with their error? Well, let's recall what Gelfand and Jagloom had to say. Their hypothesis was to take the original Lagrangian form of the path integral, which involved only the x coordinate, the position coordinate, or q if you like, in our language. Curly dx, that would be the Feynman original version.
Okay.
Happy already? No, yeah, e to the minus 1 over 2 nu x dot squared dt. We are asking that our integrand, however, be good in this measure, but it cannot be good in this measure. You might ask yourself, well, there are certain Hamiltonians, where are we? This is a good enough example. Well, over here is a good example. There are certain Hamiltonians
which, for example, would be quadratic in the xc1 variable, and then a potential of xc2, that's like our p squared over 2 plus v of q, in which I could integrate out the xc2, I could integrate out the xc2s here, c1. Integrate out the momentum. Sorry about that. And because that's quadratic, and indeed I can do that. That would give me an expression entirely in terms of coordinate q's alone. How does that kind of expression relate to this expression? This expression is absolutely local in time. There is one time integral here for the Lagrangian, for the action, if you will. But in virtue of this x1 dot squared here, when I integrate out the x1 dot, I will have a displacement in time. I will have xc2 at t2 and xc2 at t1 with some kind of kernel between them, depending on the times and nu, of course, which means that formula will not be looking like that formula. So indeed, we do get around the Gelfand-Jagiellon problem because we don't have the xc1 dot squared question to ask, or the xc2 dot squared question to ask. We have a bona fide stochastic integral to talk about.
So just doubling the dimensions sort of did the magic trick?
The question is, doubling the dimensions is the magic trick? Well, the short answer is yes. However, I think it underscores the absolutely essential fact that in quantum mechanics, capital P and capital Q associated with the Hamiltonian classical variables are on an equal footing. They enter parallel. You cannot properly do quantum mechanics without a recognition of this fact. So this doubling of the variables, in my opinion, is correcting your original attempt to stay alone with the cues. Okay, we have 2 minutes left before we're technically over. Let's give ourselves both a break and really start the constraint business next time. Some of us will be going to, how many hands are going to Montreal? Just two. Okay. Enjoy yourselves. Yeah.